you hear it without me.
Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. This is your morning show host, Julie Calamine, and you'd normally hear me introducing Phil Huff, but Phil is away on vacation, and we have this morning a special guest host, and it is Don Childress. Good morning, Don.
Good morning, Julie. Thank you for inviting me to host today. I do know the people who are here today, and I know their organization, so I'm really pleased to be joining you.
Good. You're prepared and you're ready, although it is your first time as a co-host, so we will make some, if we need to make concessions, we're ready to do it.
I'll certainly try not to screw up. Thank you.
Very good. We'll introduce our guests in a moment, but before that, let's talk about what's been happening around town, at least for the two of us, and then we'll go on to a little bit of weather. What's your week been like, Don?
Well, actually, I just got back yesterday from fishing in Mexico. I was down in Laredo fly fishing for Dorado.
Nice.
Had a great time. The weather was comfortably hot, but we had a really good time.
Good. And I hope you caught a few fish.
Did catch a few fish, and it's always nice to be back in Sandpoint.
That's right. Well, very good. So you don't have much local Sandpoint news, but I have just a bit about goings on, and one is huckleberry picking. I've been out looking and with my good friend Susie, and we looked and looked and looked this week, and I think we went a bit too high because we found small green ones. We're going to have to come down or wait a bit.
It is a weather and altitude-dominated sport, isn't it?
It certainly is.
But it is fun to get out in the woods.
That's right. So we'll work our way down, and then we'll probably work our way back up. And huckleberry is kind of a weather-related activity, so let's talk about weather for this week. And we have our typical Bonner County Sandpoint weather coming, and boy, are we happy to have it, although not as rainy as some people might like. Today, I'm seeing high of 88 and sunny. Tonight, low of 53. Tomorrow, a high of 87 and sunny. And again, a low in the middle 50s. Same kind of story for Thursday, mostly sunny in the upper 80s, lows in the 50s. It just goes on and on and on, Don.
And Julie, speaking of weather, it's gardening weather.
It surely
and
is.
I understand you've been leaving the show right afterwards for a gardening project. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about that?
All right, just a little bit. Well, both you and I have been volunteering at the Sagal School in conjunction with the Bonner County Gardeners Association. They've gathered up volunteers who are willing to help the kids in the elementary schools, all the elementary schools in the district, to work on their own school gardens. And it's what's interesting about it is that kids will still show up in the summer to do a little bit of gardening. It's pretty nice.
It's an enthusiastic group, and those that do show up are rewarded because they get to do the picking.
They do, and there have been a few things to pick, hopefully more to come when the kids come back to school. Well, all right, we've talked about weather, we've talked about goings on, and now it's time to introduce our guests, and we've got great ones this morning. I'd like to introduce you, Clem Yonkers. You're the current president of the Idaho Master Naturalist Program. Good morning, Clem.
Good morning, Julie. And good morning, Don, to you.
Good morning.
And they are friends. And we will then secondly introduce Mary Haley, who is the training coordinator for the Master Naturalist. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning.
It's so good to have you here this morning. Well, would like to begin by having you tell us a bit about yourselves and how you came to be both living in Sandpoint and also how you came to be associated with the Master Naturalist. Let's start with you, Mary.
Well, I grew up in Moscow, so I knew how incredibly wonderful it was up here. My first job took me down to southeastern Idaho, where I met my husband. We spent 30 years, and he always said he would never retire to Idaho, so I told him he didn't know what Idaho looked like. So I drug him north, we hit Clark Fork, and his jaw dropped, and I had him.
That is sort of it's not an uncommon story, and it's a good story. So he moved on in, and you're here. Good. And then how did you come to be with the Master Naturalists?
Well, we trained down in southeastern Idaho. We had a lot of friends who were Master Naturalists, and my husband's an environmental engineer. So when he was looking at retirement, it's was just a very natural walk into doing.
No pun intended.
Yes.
Yes. Well, very good. And for how long have you been a Master Naturalist?
It has been over 5 years, 5 or 6 years.
Very, very good. All right, Clem, now we'll need for you to tell us
about yourself. It's my turn now.
Huh? Yes, it is. And you're not joined by your wife, Lori, this morning.
No, I think she's out there listening, but she did want to come in this morning to contribute. Anyway, Lori and I, we live down in the Tri-Cities area, Washington, in the desert. And when we would vacation, we always wanted to, we would come up to places such as Sandpoint to see the trees and the cooler weather from the desert northwest. When we had the opportunity, we bought our land in 91, like a lot of people, very early, and retired in 2010 and moved up here permanently in 2010 then.
All right. And all right, so you had your land for some time and then were able to retire and come here. What a great way to do things.
Well, we thought so. It worked out for us.
Yes. And how did you, and actually Lori also is a master naturalist, how did you two become involved?
Yes, we came in as a power couple for the master naturalists, just like Mary and Dan Haley. They're another one of our power couples, as I call them. The couples seem to do well. They keep each other enthused and moving forward in the projects. Don, we saw this in 2011 when they first organized it. Don was one of the charter members of the crew organizing the Master Naturalists with the Idaho Fish and Game. And we saw the announcement in Sandpoint Online, and Lori and I said, gee, we don't know that much about the area and about the resources, the natural resources here. We thought it would be a great opportunity to learn more about the forest and the mammals and the rocks. So we said that would be something we'd like to get involved with. So we signed up and they accepted us, and the rest is history.
And that answers part of a question that I would have had for you, which is, what's in it for the master naturalist? I understand you give back a lot, but you gain something, and it's a lot of information.
Yes, exactly. I mean, we ask people to volunteer. That's mainly what we want. But in the conjunction with that, we give them quite a bit of 40 hours of training in different areas where sometimes they might be strong in them. Like Don knows a lot about fishing. Don's actually a master naturalist. And so he helps us out with that. That's an area he's strong in, but he might be weak in plants or trees. I don't think he is, but I'm just saying he could be.
As an example.
You might know plants, right, Don?
Don, Julie's outnumbered here. There are three master naturalists.
I have been involved with plants for a while, but I do want to say that the volunteer projects are also a learning situation. And by getting out and doing it, you're also getting out and learning.
Right. And what we try to do is just give people backgrounds, just to pique their interest. And because we're all adults and it's continuing learning usually, then we anticipate people will go further and learn more and delve more into a particular area if they don't know much about it. Again, I'll just pick on plants. If you don't know much about the wild native plants in the area, we give you a little taste of it, and then you can go and either volunteer with Kinnikinick or take more courses and in more in-depth courses, let's say, and try to develop your knowledge deeper in that particular area.
In my experience, a lot of master naturalists are also belong to the Native Plant Society. The two sort of go hand in hand.
Yeah. The other thing that you get is friends. If you're new to the area, this is a fabulous way to get more networking. But you're getting people who have the same sort of interest that you have. Their love for the outdoor, their love for learning, their love for reaching out and helping nature, but helping fellow people as well, their love for kids. So that gets you immediately into a group of really like-minded, fun, non-political people.
It sounds like a great organization, which leads me to the question, what is the mission? Who would like to take that one on?
Well, I have brought my brochure so I can get the words.
Exactly right.
And I can hold it up to the mic so your audience can see it.
We can hear the paper crinkling.
Well, I'll try now. Anyway, that's just so I get the words right, because I've said it many times, but sometimes you want to make sure you get it right. The Idaho Master Naturalist Program aims to develop a group of well-informed volunteers to actively work towards the stewardship of Idaho's natural environment. And I think those words sort of say it all. We're looking for people that not only are interested in learning, but want to be stewards of the natural environment that we have all around us. As you walk out in the morning and look, everyone agrees it's spectacular, and we're trying to develop stewards for that.
Yes, we'll appreciate it, but the more we know, the better, certainly. And you're local here, of course, but the organization is more than just local.
Yes, we're statewide. I think we have about 8 chapters throughout the state, and located in various parts of the state. And we have our state coordinator, Sarah Folk, is in Boise, and she keeps us on our toes and keeps us running straight. But yeah, it's a group of people statewide that are interested in the resources of Idaho.
And there's a pretty strong connection with the fish and game of Idaho. Tell us a little bit about that, Glenn.
Yes, we're essentially, we're started by Idaho Fish and Game. It doesn't mean we don't interact with other organizations. We have Trout Unlimited, Friends of Scotchman Peaks. We volunteer for lots of different organizations in town. But Fish and Game began as the coordinators for the Idaho Master Naturalists, and they're still the coordinators for that. And we have a liaison between our chapter, the Pend'Oreille chapter, and Fish and Game, Pete Carpenter, Gardner. Yeah, I keep saying Carpenter for some reason. But Pete is our liaison, and it's a pretty strong interaction. He's on the board. He doesn't direct us, though. We're a self-directing board. We go where we want to go. He just gives us advice. And so
Fish and Game is actually the sponsor of the Master Naturalist organization. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. Okay. That's correct.
But it is the sponsor, but there are many other organizations that you connect with. Tell us a bit about that, Mary or Clem.
Well, we have Friends of Scotchman's Peak Wilderness that we connect with, the Kootenai Wildlife, Refuge, thank you. Senior moment there. We have, people are handing me paper, sorry.
The papers
grabbing
are
it
fine.
Myself, too. The Friends of the Bay Trail. Of course, Kinnikinick, as you said, many, many people in the Kinnikinick Society and the Master Naturalists overlap. Many of our educational opportunities we take off of the Kinnikinick Societies. They're fabulous. So Ducks Unlimited, Trout Unlimited, and if you have an organization that is an environmentally, you know, you're a scientist and you're looking for volunteers. I recently did a class up on with the Xerces Society for bees.
I wanted to go to that class.
It
I
was
couldn't make it.
So good. It was really good. And supposedly I'm going to get a t-shirt, so all good.
Oh, wow.
So, but, you know, if you are a scientist with U of I or something like that and you are looking for citizen science, we would love to talk to you. So, you know, we have a wide net of interest and a wide net of connections.
Well, what type of volunteer work do you guys do, and who are you looking for to help with that?
Well, let's see. Right now we had some projects. We were looking, again, with the Idaho Fish and Game for grizzly bear hair rubs, because they're trying to genetically determine how many grizzly bears are there and what type of bears, et cetera.
We don't comb their hair either.
No.
We're not.
But we needed they needed volunteers to go with their field person, because it's great hiking out here, but you want to go at least 2 people together, just in case, especially if you're looking for grizzly bears. So we had that.
Just looking for their hair.
Yeah.
But still, I don't think going alone is a good idea for
no.
that project.
Then we had, Mary mentioned the Bee Society. We have right now another project with Kristen Boyd of Fish and Game. She's looking for bumblebees, and we're trying to collect plants, seeds from plants that bumblebees are attracted to for one of the wildlife management areas along the border up there past Bonner's Ferry. And then there's a call coming out, too, for mid-August. Don might be able to speak to this a little bit better. But we're going to float. We're looking for volunteers to float the Peace River to get a temperature gradient. They want to get that profile to enhance the fisheries and try to understand how they might be able to better enhance the fisheries in the future. And we do trail work for Idaho Trails Association. We have volunteers that do that. Francis Scotchman Peaks asked for volunteers for trail work, and we have a couple volunteers that love doing that. And so we have a committee chair that keeps his finger on the pulse of what people need in the area, calls people, asks what's going on, and then we try to get it out to the members.
And then there's kind of a second type of volunteering, and that's the educational piece. So we help with the fifth grade field trips for water festival, third grade, second and third grade field trips out at the Water Life Discovery Center for water quality and fisheries. And so we help with different field trips that the schools come out. And of course, we run the Water Life Discovery Center, which is an educational opportunity. It is open 12:30, 1 o'clock.
Right, Tuesdays through Fridays right now, from June through August.
All right, and I'm going to back up just a little bit because as part of your organizational description, I've read that you have, as you're discussing, a research track and a educational track, basically. So depending on your preference in wanting to help out, that's sort of...
Yes, you're exactly right, Julie. We have the two tracks, citizen science and the education. I'm glad Mary's here to speak about the education because they don't let me interact with the kids. They say I scare them.
Oh.
So I mainly stay on the citizen science side. Those are projects that I like, but she did mention some of our educational efforts, which are very important.
Mm-hmm. And just sort of along those lines, what I'm hearing you're saying is that basically anything related to a naturalist project, whether it be education or research, and it might be a nonprofit or an arm of Idaho government that you haven't mentioned yet, but basically the naturalist, it's create a program is what I'm getting at, right? You can add and subtract. It's what the volunteer's interested in.
Absolutely. So oftentimes people will go off into other directions.
One thing that you haven't brought out that I covers both the science and the education is the Master Naturalist, Master Naturalist, along with Trout Unlimited, was a spearhead for a project on Trestle Creek. As everyone's probably aware, the little salmon go up Trestle Creek and spawn in the fall, and a lot of people go out there and look at them and wonder what's really going on. And so Clem and Trout Unlimited also spearheaded a project with Fish and Game to put some kiosks out there to explain what was going on. And then Fish and Game, of course, took it and ran with it, and it's a $1 million project now. Clem, why don't you speak a second to that?
Yeah, I'd like to. Don's exactly right. We go out to Trestle Creek in the fall in September every year and watch the kokanee, the early spawning kokanee, run up the creek. And we felt that we always saw public out there, the public, and lots of times there was a lot of confusion on what was going on, what the fish species was, what they were doing in the creek. So we thought it was a perfect opportunity to do something for public outreach. I went to Trout Unlimited, spoke to their board. They agreed with it that we should do something. We were going to try to do something together on a smaller scale. We brought it to it's on a Vista property there. So we went to the Vista people, talked to them in Fish and Game, and they got so excited that it was actually taken out of our hands and they went and ran with it. I did have to say I went by Trestle Creek the other day because we went up to Lunch Peak again looking for huckleberries and other, and just for a nice ride. And they're starting to log and clear out some of the trees for the trails, etc. So we're hoping, and I'm hoping that that this will be done by September when the fish start running again. So we have our fingers crossed about that.
And what a nice story of collaboration. Someone from the Master Naturalists, y'all had an idea, which was a good idea, and got everyone excited that could make a difference. And look, it's going to happen. It's neat. That's a great story.
Yeah, I think it is. We're excited about it. We're going to keep pushing to make sure it happens. But I wanted to digress, Julian, and discuss something that you brought up earlier about the citizen science ends of the different master naturalists. We don't give any specific guidance to our master naturalist members on what projects they might like to do for their citizen science effort. And we have one woman, Mary Wells, who actually decided she wants to lead naturalist talks in Round Lake State Park.
Oh.
And so she goes down, and I at least once or twice a month, and I noticed there's one on Sandpoint and Line that's coming up that Mary will lead in the campground itself. And I spoke to her at one of our board meetings, and she said last time she had 30 people that were with her on her talk. Yeah, I was excited about that. And what was interesting, I found out, she said only 2 of the 30 were campers at Round Lake. The other 28 were all local people that came because they wanted to find more about what's going on out there in nature. And she leads the talk, answers their questions, tells them what trees they're looking at, what species of plants, etc.
That's a great story. And again, it's someone who is a volunteer, had an idea, and they're partnering with another organization. In this case, it's the Idaho State Parks, and working with you all and putting together something that's really going to inform folks that are interested. It's great.
Yeah, it's an exciting opportunity. She's done that all herself. So we try to encourage our members in both the education or a science project to go forward with that and try to develop whatever their interests are.
All right. Well, I would like to hear a bit more about the Master Naturalist's involvement in the Water Discovery Center.
Well, the Water Discovery Center was the old fish hatchery. And, you know, it is a 100-year-old facility, and Fish and Game wanted to make it into an educational facility. And that was one of their impulses in creating this particular chapter of the Master Naturalists in the first place. So we have taken that and we have created a great place to bring your kids. There are picnic tables. There's a public dock. A lot of people don't know they can bring their boat or their kayak and tie up at the public dock there if they wish. And we have a house that has a historical piece to it, so you can see how a naturalist lived 100 years ago. There are backpacks that you can check out, take out, and catch bugs, collect plants, and the Master Naturalist will help you identify those things. There are cards to help you identify things. There are microscopes. There is places to color. So it is terrific for all ages. And plus, it's at a nature walk. There's all kinds of beautiful opportunities out there, and it's all free.
Now, this was the old fish hatchery. Are they still using the fish hatchery? Is there any fishing game activity out there connected with the fish still?
They don't raise fish there, but they stage fish there. The problem with raising fish there is it's a natural spring and it's too cold. The fish don't grow fast enough for them to really raise them there, but they will bring in thousands and thousands of fish to put in the runways and then take those fish out to Round Lake or wherever they're stocking up in North Idaho.
And there is a little man-made lake there that I understand does have fish. Do they still have fish in the lake that people can come and view and also feed and watch the fish?
Yes, and because they had to do some work on that lake a couple years ago, the fish are not nearly as big and fat as the other ones had become. So please come and feed those fish and get them chubbed up so they're a little cuter.
That's right. Chub them up.
And once again, I have brought the brochure that we have for the Water Life Discovery Center. Now, I'll hold it up to the microphone so all the audience can see. But
crinkle paper. Thank you.
So you can hear that I brought it. It's the new brochure describing what's available at the Waterlife Discovery Center. It's available from the Chamber of Commerce. We've brought these brochures into the Chamber of Commerce, so your listeners can go there to get one if they want to. We also have it available out at the Waterlife Discovery Center, too. Mm-hmm. So, but you can pick up, it's got a map of the trails, and it's probably the flying under the radar of the local public here, that the facility is there and available to people to come and look through the exhibits, learn a little bit more about water resources in the state, what's in the local area, etc.
If you have out-of-town guests, it's a really nice place to take them. It's a good showing of our area.
Mm. And it's, though the house and the master naturalists are there during limited hours, the facility is open. So the picnic tables, the dock, the trails, they're open for the public whenever you wish to come.
I'd like to back up and ask just a quick question about the formation of it as an area for public information and your naturalist hours that are spent there. Did that idea come from you all, or how did it all come about? Because there it was, a hatchery that wasn't operating as a hatchery. Was it a?
Well, it was property that Fishing Game was actually going to surplus.
Oh.
Because the hatchery was defunct. They weren't using it, and so because of monetary reasons, they were thinking of surplusing it and selling the property.
Okay.
So it would have gone out of public hands and into private hand.
Oh.
But the city fathers here in the Sandpoint area didn't want that to happen, so they thought long and hard what they wanted, and this was the idea for it, have it be a resource for the public, a public education facility that could be open and available, and Fishing Game would run it. And so our chapter got involved in it a couple years ago. We wrote a grant, got some monies to put in the educational exhibits that you see in the old hatchery manager's house that's there. And it's more slanted, I would say, towards young people, children and young people, than adults. But the adults have fun, too, learning with their kids. So that's how it sort of came about. And we, as the chapter, we have naturalists on duty, docents. We call them NODS. Our acronym are NODS. They're there from Tuesday through Friday, 12 to 4 p.m., and that's from June through August. We're thinking of maybe opening it up on Saturdays in September if we can get our volunteer NODS to man it through September on those Saturdays.
And other organizations are eligible to come in and use the facility. I know that Trout Unlimited has put on some fly fishing instructional programs, one to veterans a couple of years ago. And so I know other organizations do use the facility also.
Yes, and I think the Native Plant Society has used it for a meeting or two in the summer, too, where they have like a meet and greet and have a barbecue out there. But I know, the Trout Unlimited had a fish-in.
We've used it a couple of times, actually.
For training for kids and veterans.
Yes, well, it's an example of the Master Naturalists really making it more available to the public and available for more education. So, good job. Well, we're going to take a song break and then come back and talk more about things that the Master Naturalists have been doing and are about to do. And this song was selected for Clem, really. It will be the Dodgy Mountain Men. And that was the Dodgy Mountain Men with The Nature of Things. For those of you just joining us, this is 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. And you are listening to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show with your morning show host, Julie Calamine. That's me, and I'm joined this morning by Don Childress. We've been talking with the Pondere chapter of the Idaho Master Naturalists with Clem Yonkers and Mary Haley, and we're back from the song break to talk further about all things Master Naturalists. You've got some questions for Clem, Don.
Well, I don't remember where we talked about your sound, your information. Do you have some information, contact information for us?
Yes, I do. Thanks, Don, for asking, because if you're interested in getting More information about the Master Naturalist program or what's going on statewide in the Master Naturalist, there's a web page. It's on the Fish and Game web page, but I can give you the address so your listeners can write it down. It's www.idahomasternaturalists.org. That'll get you to that web page for the description of the Master Naturalist program and what's going on. And then if you want to get in contact with us, the local chapter, the Pondere chapter, our Gmail address is imn.sandpoint@gmail.org. And I'll give you that again because it's imn.sandpoint@gmail.org. And I pay attention to that. I follow that. That comes up. Mary and her husband Dan follow it. It comes up on their computer screen. And so if you have any questions or any comments or more information, you can get us at that Gmail address.
Or if you want to join a great group of people.
Great, thank you. And you mentioned earlier that there's some training involved. What, tell us about the training, when it is, what's involved.
Well, the training starts up usually in the spring. And like the master gardeners, I do the joke that the master gardeners are the masters of order and the master naturalists are the masters of disorder. So we start our training usually in the spring. What we have done is we do like an intense weekend, 8 to 10 hours on a weekend of training. It is 40 hours of training and 40 hours of volunteer time within 1 year to become a master naturalist certified. And after that, it's 8 hours of continuing ed every year. We provide 40 hours, but it doesn't have to be our 40 hours. So let's say you're working and some of our classes are in the middle of the week, but you want to go to the Kinnikinick Society or you want to go to the training the Xerce Society provides. That's all good. So we do 40 hours of a wide-ranging thing. So for instance, we were out with Kathy Cousins last week in the Clark Fork Delta. So she took us out on the Delta Queen and showed us the Clark Fork Project and talked about wetlands. We've done a field trip out to learn about native plants with Derek. We've done we've learned about birds with Kathy
Carrie Hugo. That was up at the Kootenai National Wildlife Refuge.
Yeah, so, you know, that was one that was open to the public. We did a bird walk. She teaches us how to tell what a bird is by their song. And Carrie likes a lot of food because she usually breaks her songs into hamburgers and fries and things like that.
You see descriptions. But, and these are people with lots of education in these topics. These are really experts that are training you.
And so we have a lot of fish and game people. We also have people come in with PhDs. One of the challenges is that we have professional educators like Chris Snuff with the U of I Extension who come in, but we oftentimes have people who are actually doing the field work. So Britta Olson, people who are actually in doing the work, and they're not professional educators. So if you want shiny syllabuses and perfect, classes, then we won't always have that, but this is an opportunity to actually hear from the scientists that are doing the work. So they may not always give the most polished class, although Britta gives a fabulous class, but they may not be a polished educator. But how often do you get a chance to sit at the feet of the people who are actually doing the research? That I find really exciting.
And if I were not a master naturalist and wanted to sit in on one of your classes that I found interesting, are they open to the public?
Some of them are. Not all of them because of space. But we do have, for instance, in early October, we will be talking about fish with Andy Ducks, and we will be up at Trestle Creek. So hopefully this year the fish will show up. They didn't show up last year. But he will talk about Kokanee and the fish in Pend'Oreille Lake. And so, you know, he is one of the Idaho's premier fish biologists.
Yes, and so what I'm, again, what I'm hearing you saying is that if you're maybe a little interested in considering becoming a master naturalist, there are ways to interact with the group and discover if it's going to be a good fit for you.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you are thinking about coming, you know, yes, contact us. We'll tell you when the next class is you can sit in. But we do have usually three or four classes a year at least that is open for the public in general, whether you're interested or not.
So if I'm hearing you right, then there is a formal studies. Is that, do you get a certificate, or how do you recognize those who have completed the formal studies?
You get a super cool pin.
Oh
wow. And a certificate. But we also, as a chapter...
And a hat.
Yeah, I'm wearing the hat. I'll hold it up to the microphone again, but you won't hear it crinkling. But we also have a position in the chapter where you can become a member if you have a particular training area that we're interested in. And you want to teach a class to us, we'll waive your 40 hours of other classwork if you'll teach a course to us, our Master Naturalist course, so you can take care of that part of becoming certified for us. And you don't have to be certified to be a member. We have lots of members that are still working on their certification that still come and interact with us. And so sometimes you can certify because the way life is and things work out, and you can get your 40 hours of class worm working, your 40 hours of volunteering in. Sometimes life gets in the way and you don't certify, but we still ask those people to still interact with us and still come out.
So they can become a member? Can you pay a membership fee and still become a member of the Master Naturalist without the certification?
We'll always take your money.
And it's not a lot. It's $10. Yeah, we encourage people to continue working towards certification and taking the coursework and trying to get that 40 hours of volunteer effort per year to us. But sometimes, like I said, life intervenes and it just doesn't work out. But that doesn't mean you have to drop out and you can't be a master naturalist.
Oh, good. It's an easygoing group. And, you know, we've been talking a bit about costs, and I heard $10, and that doesn't sound anywhere near an amount that would cover all the training that everyone receives.
Well, there is. It costs about $50, $60 for the training. But again, when you think of 40 hours, that is a drop in the bucket. So,
yes, of the volunteer, their return.
Yeah.
And we hope it's more than $40 or $50 that they get in return out of the classes.
Yeah. And that's one time, you know. So,
yeah, those fees, the dues is $10 per year. So.
I see.
And how many members do you have?
I think we're in about 30 or so active members that have paid their dues this year.
And 30 so, plus.
Yeah, we're somewhere in there.
Okay.
And then those of you who listen to me very often will know that I always like to know where all the money is coming from, and it still doesn't seem like enough to keep you all running. Do you have additional partners that help fund you?
We have a fish feeder.
You do? And we sell bird houses.
The fish feeder goes a quarter at a time, and in the summers, especially 2 years ago when we had a lot of fish in there, the public loved that. We could make $15, $16 a weekend on one quarter at a time for that. So that goes in the general pool. And like Mary says, we have bird boxes. This year we had a volunteer, Dennis Braun, that ran that at the Super One Drug in town.
Yes.
And he brought bird boxes there, and it was a Saturday that he sold boxes from 8 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon, and did quite well in terms of sold like 50 or 60 boxes. And I think, is it $10 or $15
per box? $10
per box.
And we try to sell them two at a time because they're bluebird boxes, and the sparrows will take one of them, guaranteed. So if you have one for the sparrows, then he leaves one for the bluebirds.
There
but
you go.
The other thing is that, you know, occasionally we will write grants. So the Water Life Discovery Center was a grant. And we're, you know, thinking about doing some things to make the actual old fish hatchery more of an educational center. We do that, that'll be a grant. So.
And, but I think you brought up an important point, Julie, that I need to make as the president. We're not a money-raising organization. We don't ask people to come in and fundraise for us, or that's part of their goal or effort for the Master Naturalist is the fundraise. We don't do any fundraising. These little things that I talk about, the bluebird boxes are sort of like a natural extension of the Master Naturalist. We're a very frugal organization. We have good support from Fish and Game to cover some of our costs. And so we can charge those small amounts to give what the training that's needed to the public or of interest to the public.
Yes, really good to hear that. Well, folks, as we draw toward the end of our hour and are going to begin wrapping up, I'd ask you if you have any interesting stories that are worth sharing, any memorable Master Naturalist stories, funny, hair-raising, etc.
Well, I took my training down in southeastern Idaho, and one of the things that I knew nothing about was birding. And so there was a class up at a wildlife area down in southeastern Idaho. It was a field trip on birding. So I wasn't organized by the Master Naturalist, but I got excited and signed up and went off. Well, when I got there, I was the youngest person by at least 30 years and the only woman. And I hadn't brought binoculars, because I didn't know what I was doing. And so here are a lot of older gentlemen that not just had binoculars, had things that looked like Hubble telescopes. And so off we went, and I found out that what this really was a field trip back into an area where most people were not normally allowed. So the deep, deep, serious birders were coming. And I heard a bird song, and I said, "Oh, that's pretty, what's that?" And one old guy looks at me and he goes, "It's a red-winged blackbird," you know, with great dismissive disgust.
A kind of common one, yeah. A common bird.
And find, you know, one guy handed me his old binoculars, which were probably worth $1,000. And so they were all fascinated by, you know, this, you know, sap-sucking, I don't know, whatever it was. And I'm looking through these binoculars, and I see something huge in the water. And I got all excited. I said, "What kind of bird is that? What is that? What is that?" Finally, I took the binoculars off. It was a herd of elk.
Oh.
And the biologist, who was terrific, he came over and he explained that when elk get confused or scared, they go in circles. And so they were in the lake swimming in circles because nobody is ever in that area. And I look at all these old guys who are staring at this little tiny bird, and I go, "Guys, look at that. Look, it's a herd of elk." And they look over at me in great disgust. And then this one guy whispers, or he thinks is a whisper. Of course, these guys all can't hear. He goes, "Well, you got to admit, the greenhorn's at least a little cute."
No, oh, that's cute. That is a cute story. And you hung in there, and look at you today. You're the vice president, soon to be president. Clem, anything interesting to share?
For me personally, I don't have any really. I can't top that story. That's a good one, Mary. But I remember one that was told by one of our members, Phil Deegans, who was volunteering for Friends of Scotchman Peak at the time when they were doing the Wolverine studies. We had volunteers involved with that, where they had to take the beaver carcasses and they were going to be put up on the trees so the Wolverine could go up there and he'd get the photograph taken. And Phil was given the job of drilling the holes through the beaver so he could mount them on the trees. And these were supposed to be frozen solid, but Phil said they weren't quite frozen solid when he had to drill these beavers.
Maybe so not the best job ever.
So he remembers that story of one of his volunteer opportunities for the Naturalist. And then when he told it to the group, I have never forgotten that. So I find that sort of funny. But
you just never know what you might be doing.
That's right. You never know as a master naturalist what you might be asked to do.
And it all sounds pretty interesting. Well, why don't you share your contact information with us one more time, and then we'll take a song break and be back with some upcoming events.
Okay. Well, thanks, Julie. So if you're interested in more information on the Master Naturalist, there's on our website, on Fish and Game's website, I should say. That's www.idahomasternaturalist, all one word, .org. And that'll take you to the website. And if you want to contact us and have Mary respond to you about training, that's imn.sandpoint@gmail.org. imn.sandpoint@gmail.org. And you can address it directly to Mary and ask her a question about the opportunities coming up for training.
Very good.
And what's the next opportunity that someone would have to enjoy one of your events, Clem?
Well, me, I'm turning it over to our training coordinator. That's Mary's question.
You know, we had one that we're rescheduling, so I don't have the biologist yet scheduled. You will find things on Sandpoint Online. I do know the first part of October, we will be with Andy Ducks out at Trestle Creek for kokanee spawning. So check Sandpoint Online. We don't have anything that's open to the public, I believe, in August yet.
But will your website have that information when you have something open
yes,
for the public?
Yes, we do have a calendar with all of the classes and information and volunteer opportunities.
That would be a good place for
that's an
for
excellent people.
Yeah,
place.
Yeah, it would be under the Poundere chapter. There's a column with the different chapters in the state, and the Poundere chapter has a current calendar.
There
you go. Or you could just send us an email at that Gmail address that I gave
great.
You.
Very good. Well, they can always go to Round Lake and meet one of the Master Naturalists.
That's right, Mary Wells.
This week. I want to thank you both, Mary Haley and Clem Yonkers, for joining us this morning, joining Don and me. We're going to take a song break and be back with some upcoming events. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And the song will next be...